You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome to the Roto Experts. We're off to the races. It's week 8. We got underway on Thursday night. I'd like to welcome you to the Roto Experts this morning. This lovely Saturday morning, we'll be here for the next couple of hours taking you around the world of the NFL and its impact on fantasy football. Obviously, start and sit questions are in order. Injury updates will be coming within the next few segments. A lot of news items out of the NFL, obviously, which are going to potentially impact teams like the Houston Texans and so on and so forth. We will get to everything that we can. It is a big week for buys, so you're going to have to keep that in mind as you're setting your lineups. Hopefully, you hit the waiver wire earlier this week to replace some of these guys that are out. The Cardinals, which I would say are probably in need of a buy more than any other team, although, unfortunately, that buy isn't going to help Carson Palmer's arm. He's going to be out for 8 weeks is the call. It might be the last we've seen of him this season. The Packers, the Jaguars, the Rams, the Giants, and the Titans all off this week. Some in desperate need of a bye. It's a pretty good time of year for those teams to get it. They get a nice break, get people healthy. So we'll turn our page back for a second to the Thursday night game, which was Dolphins at Ravens, and it was an ugly one. For all of the positive vibes that Thursday night football had in turning around the putrid performances of the past over the last couple of weeks. Chiefs-Raiders was an exciting one. Panthers-Eagles was a good one. We saw an absolute clunker. 40-0. The Ravens take out the Dolphins. Completely inept Miami offense was really the story of the game. And from a fantasy football perspective, the only story was the Ravens defense. I have them in one league. They picked up 32 points, a massive number for a defense special teams entry. They pitched the shutout, which is usually bonus points. They had two pick sixes. Jimmy Smith and C.J. Mosley contribute there. And that was really about it. We had a decent performance from Alex Collins. He didn't get into the end zone, but 18 carries for 113. He seems to be establishing himself as the lead back, although Javorius Allen, picked up 17 carries for 55 yards. So it was kind of a chippy game. George and I will talk about that after the break and get you caught up as to, you know, what he thinks of Kiko Alonso's hit on Joe Flacco. That was really the story the next day, is how bad Miami was, that Jay Cutler will ultimately be coming back in for Matt Moore next week, and that Joe Flacco took a nasty hit from Kiko Alonso. I'll give you my thoughts after the break as well. We'll try and do it in a little bit of a longer form discussion. Jay Ajayi, another bad one. His last 12 carries counted for 2 yards. The first one was 21 yards and 2 yards for the rest of the game. Basically, the last 99% of the game was his production, was 2 yards. So, again, Ravens whip up on the Dolphins 40-0. You can give us a call here today at 844-843-6879. Hit me up on Twitter at Mike Blewett. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. And George on Twitter at George Kurtz. We'll be back. We're talking Ravens, Dolphins, injuries, and all the games in Week 8 on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be back.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Hello, Roto Experts. Thanks for joining us this morning. If you're catching us on the Fantasy Sports Radio app, we appreciate it. But we'd like to welcome you in also from iHeartRadio, from TuneIn Radio, from a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. We really do appreciate it. And again, if you want to give us a call, it's 844-843-6879. And on Twitter, at FNTSY Radio. I'll get to some questions that we have on Twitter a little bit later, and you know, some texts and all different types of questions that I get during the week. I'll try and flush those out for you. So let me go through the box score a little bit on Thursday, even though it was a relatively uneventful game. Just an absolute blowout. Matt Moore obviously didn't really play well, but I think the problems are clearly deeper than him. It's pretty amazing that Miami is 4-3, and they squeaked out a couple of close wins, because they really, it's no surprise, they haven't really played well in a lot of these games. They beat the Jets late. They beat the Titans, I believe it was, real close. So they've been getting by despite struggles up front. And it's a common theme in the NFL this year, where teams haven't been able to open up holes for their run games and or protect their quarterbacks. You see that with the Seahawks to some extent. We certainly see that with the Giants. We see it here with Miami. I think Matt Moore was pretty desperate and ended up throwing those pick sixes. One was a brutal. I mean, they were both really bad throws, but the game was already getting out of hand when those happened. I'm not absolving him. I'm just saying that they were throwing at a rate that they really shouldn't be throwing for a team like that. So anyway, Joe Flacco was really the big story as he gets knocked out of the game by Kiko Alonso. He went 10 of 15 with a touchdown before then, which he threw to Ben Watson. And the hit garnered a lot of controversy, a lot of conversation on social media. Here's my thoughts on it. Obviously, they've done a lot in order to protect quarterbacks and try to keep these guys out of harm's way, and they will never completely be out of harm's way. Flacco did pull up. He pulled up pretty late, and I thought Alonso went a little too far and deserved the penalty. Do I think it's going to garner a suspension? That's a little difficult for me to answer, because there's a little bit of a moving target when it comes to what it is that the NFL deems to be excessive. I think it was excessive enough to garner the penalty. I've watched the play a number of times. I think him throwing the elbow up there, throwing the shoulder up there, you could argue either way he was trying to get the guy down, or you could argue that he was given a little bit extra. I don't think it garners a suspension, and I'm a little tougher on these guys usually than some of my co-hosts are. So I think he's going to take the penalty. I think he's going to take a fine, and I think that'll be it. I can't speak necessarily to Alonso's history in plays like this, but I will say that I don't think it's going to garner a suspension. A hit that he shouldn't have made, and a hit that is brutal, and it was made far worse that Flacco looked as injured as he was. It was a chippy game in general. I thought the Ravens had a right to be mad. I just don't know if it should garner a suspension. It's just my thoughts on it. I wouldn't object in any way if he were to be suspended. So, you know, you saw it, the game got so chippy. You saw Ndamukong Suh choking out Ryan Mallett at one point. Guys were getting after each other. Obviously, the Dolphins are in the middle of one of the worst blowouts in team history, and the Ravens didn't really care. They were trying to lay it on as thick as they could, and I can't blame them for it. So back to the box score. You know, they didn't throw the ball much because they were up big. Once Flacco came out, Ryan Mallett only had to throw the ball seven times. He did throw a touchdown pass. Let me just get you the exact stats. I'm sorry. The Benjamin Watson touchdown pass was from Ryan Mallett with just under 2 minutes left in the first half. Joe Flacco's touchdown pass was to Jeremy Maclin, a 34-yard pass, a nice strike from Flacco. Justin Tucker was obviously a big part of fantasy scoring that night, which isn't typical that we say that about a kicker, but he hit two really long field goals, chipped in four extra points, and he was a kicker that people probably drafted, one of the first ones off the board, and he hadn't been producing. In fact, I probably not wisely cut him in one league because the Ravens just weren't getting down the field all that much and weren't putting up that many points, so I released him, and here you go. He hits a 55-yarder and a 48-yarder along with the four extra points, so it's a kicking update for the week. Alex Collins, though, did run well. I think anybody that watched that game thought, like, all right, we got a little bit of something here. 18 carries for 113. Javorius Allen only this got the 17 carries for 55 yards. A lot of that was in the cleanup effort. He caught a pass for 2 yards. So in your half-point PPR leagues, it nets you just over 6 points. Not really what you're expecting. Jeremy Maclin, 3 catches for 53 yards and a touchdown. Ben Watson, 2 catches for 6 yards. He saves you with the touchdown. I have Ben Watson in a league. I didn't play him. I don't think 4 targets a week. Tight end position is always a mess, but 4 targets was not really what I'm looking for. Granted, this game became a blowout. Maybe Watson sees more targets than that, but Nick Boyle saw just as many. Another situation where you got a bunch of different guys that you're not really sure who to play. If Nick Boyle's going to get as many targets as Ben Watson, I don't think Ben Watson's all that valuable. So beyond that, Jay Cutler, like I said earlier, is back next week, and Matt Moore will return to the sidelines. As far as the receivers are concerned for Miami, Kenny Stills, 5 of 65 on 10 targets. I think that is encouraging. But again, Devontae Parker is currently out. And we'll have to see what his recovery time looks like. Stills part of the offense. It's just he's not going to see double-digit targets in any given week if Devontae Parker is healthy. Jarvis Landry saw double-digit targets again, 12 catches, but only 5 catches for 33 yards. So the Jarvis Landry detractors will jump all over that. I would just make sure that you know whether or not they watch the game. This wasn't a game that was going to be heavy on Jarvis Landry when they were desperate late and throwing pick sixes. So J.H.I. did catch 4 passes for 18 yards. So if you're in a full point PPR league, he had a miserable night, but at least he saved you with a few extra points there. Caught all 4 of his targets. Beyond that, nothing else. Julius Thomas, 2 catches for 2 yards. Anthony Fasano, 2 catches for 11 yards. So not a great night. for the Dolphins, not really too much more to go over. Alex Collins did catch 2 passes as well. So he had 133 yards. I should have said that earlier for the Ravens. He had 133 yards on the 20 touches. You can be greedy about him not getting into the end zone, but I'll leave it at that. So, you know, one story that and George is trying to join us. We're having a little bit of a technical issue. For those of you wondering where George might be, having a little bit of a technical issue, but he'll be back as soon as we get him connected. One name that popped up out of nowhere, which you probably won't hear once Devontae Parker came back, is Leonte Carew. He had 6 catches for 48 yards on 8 targets. Again, most of this is kind of garbage time stuff, and they weren't picking up first downs or moving the ball down the field, even when they were down by several touchdowns. So I'll put a bow on it. If George comes back on and he has any items to talk about, I will ask him about the Alonzo situation and what he thinks might happen there. But again, the big score of the night on Thursday, Ravens D, 32 points. Alex Collins picks up 133 all-purpose yards. So a couple of big stories in the news, and we'll get to them throughout the next couple of segments, are the big one is the Texans with the walkout on practice. I believe it was 10 players missed practice based on comments that were made by Houston Texans owner Bob McNair. My thoughts are that it's a horrendous analogy that he tried to make. For those of you that haven't heard it at this point, he said in a meeting between NFL executives, NFL owners, and I believe the players were privy to that you cannot have the inmates running the prison. He said this in relation to the protests that are occurring during the national anthem. First of all, that's not even the proper analogy. It's the inmates running the asylum. I think it wasn't a good analogy to make, whether he got it correct or not. It was made far worse by suggesting that these are prison inmates. I think it's insensitive. I think, unfortunately, it's reflective of the chasm that still exists between the owners and the players. He's been apologetic for it, both on the spot and afterwards. But I think that's a hard one to come back from. It doesn't mean he can't come back from it in short order or longer term. But I think that's a hard one to come back from. I think certain players understand that he may feel a certain way about them that isn't a familial feel, that they are just cogs in the wheel of commerce for him, and he doesn't want them getting in the way of the business. I think that is a very common theme amongst owners. I can't be hypercritical of it because while some of them own these teams for fun, it is a business, and they are feeling pressure from sponsors. I'll continue this topic after the break because I think it's important that we get to it. So we'll talk about the Texans. We'll talk about Martavis Bryant. We'll talk about the Marcell Dareus trade that occurred yesterday. Heck, maybe we're going to talk about the World Series for a minute. It's Mike Blewett with George Kurtz joining possibly on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be back. If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product. On the Roto Experts. Thanks for joining us this morning. You know, it's unfortunate that in the NFL we're having constant political discussions. I always think the political discourse is an important thing for people to have with one another and do so respectfully. I think that's where, frankly, we fail in most instances, is that it's not done respectfully. But unfortunately, the NFL is on the front page again of not just the sports page, but the front page of any news site that you'll go to. I was going to say newspaper, but it's kind of a dated reference for most people these days. But in any event, you have all the Texans walking out of practice. I think the players have come to an understanding that they're going to be there for one another for the game this weekend, if nobody else. And it is a tough game. They're on the road in Seattle, which brings me to the next point I was going to make about it. Richard Sherman, who's often been outspoken about these issues, has now been outspoken about Bob McNair, and he did not mince words at all. He feels that Bob McNair showed his true colors and that it is going to be a real issue for the players and the owners to ever get on the same page. And he says that in terms of he feels that Bob McNair showed his true colors and that there are other owners like that. He said he can actually appreciate the fact that he felt that McNair was somewhat honest about it and that they know exactly the type of guy that he is now. Conversely, you have Sherman praising his owner, Paul Allen, who's very philanthropic and has been, I would say, supportive of what they have done in the community and in some terms of some of the protests that have happened around the national anthem and in general. Paul Allen has been very supportive. So you have players coming out attacking the owners. I shouldn't say attacking, commenting on the owners in a way that is going to make this situation even far more uncomfortable. The owners are really feeling the heat from sponsors. You're seeing data coming out that in local markets, certain teams, for instance, the Cowboys, are getting less support than they have had in the past. I've always thought it to be this, and I'll get off the political soapbox in just a minute. I've always thought it to be an expression of freedom of speech. And if you don't like it, you have absolutely every right to not like it. But I also thought that the other shoe would drop at some point, and the NFL, as much as they've stood on the sidelines with this, would have to do something about it. They let it happen at the team level, and most teams didn't act. Now, certain owners are saying things like this, and Jerry Jones has said certain things that this won't happen again. I think they're just feeling the heat from sponsors. It's a corporate entity. It's hurting business, and I just assumed it would get to this point. So I think you'll see less of the protest, whether it's formalized in NFL rules or it is reinforced or enforced by teams that we're not going to allow you to do this or you won't play. So That's it. I'll try and have this discussion with George if he's able to join, but I'm curious how it does affect a team like the Texans. Does it galvanize them together, or are they very discouraged in playing for an owner that they feel sees them in that light? So something to keep in mind. I don't think it means you bench Deshaun Watson or DeAndre Hopkins. I'm just very curious to see how that plays out for them. So Martavis Bryant, we'll move over to the next thing. Martavis Bryant controversy. Is what it is here. He's obviously been critical on social media of the Steelers. He was then critical of a teammate, sort of demanding a trade, and I don't think they're going to trade him. They've inactivated him, so it's making it even worse for him. They can't showcase him another time, some might say. They're keeping him out so that he doesn't have a chance to get hurt before they trade him. The trade deadline is Tuesday on Halloween. And I'll go over some possible trade scenarios that I've read about and whether or not I think they're going to happen. In most instances, they don't happen, but we did see an extremely active trade market during the summer. As many as 30 trades, I think, occurred in August, and that was a departure from years past where the trade market was mostly inactive. So the Martavis Bryant controversy, I don't think this is going to impact them much at all. I think it's going to be a little bit more of Juju Smith-Schuster. Antonio Brown's the most targeted player in the league. Le'Veon Bell is the most worked running back in the league. Ben Roethlisberger hasn't even played his best football yet this season. And I don't really know what Martavis is trying to do with this. I've seen a lot of chatter about this on social media, obviously, and all over television about what you can expect from him. I don't think the Steelers are going to trade him. I think they might if they think it's going to be a divisive force in their locker room. And as the resident Steelers fan here, I will tell you my biggest concern about the Steelers over the course of the last month is all the off-field stuff. There was the anthem situation for them where Al Villanueva went and stood out, which is his right to do, and had his hand over his heart and stood for the national anthem after it was supposedly talked about that nobody would do that. He's a very unique circumstance because he is a military member that is a veteran that served in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I thought that the team played very poorly during the Bears game. There's no way to connect the dots to say that the anthem and or the protest screw up on their end where some guys are in the locker room, others weren't, and some disagreed with it. And then Ben Roethlisberger comes out and criticizes the next day. I thought it was all a mess. Then you fast forward to the Antonio Brown Gatorade cooler throwing incident where he's barking at Todd Haley, despite the fact that he's the most targeted player in the league. I thought all, and Ben Roethlisberger again coming out and sort of criticizing teammates. I just thought all of it was a mess and a team that has a real chance to go to the Super Bowl. I wouldn't favor them against the Patriots because they can't cover anybody on the Patriots, but I'm just saying they're in the mix as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not saying that because I'm a homer. I really thought that going into the year. They're over under on games this year, their total on wins was 10.5, and then in a contest I have with my friends, I took the Steelers over very confidently. I think they will still do that, sitting at 5-2. So I say all this to say this is just another issue with them, and they may want to depart from this issue. However, he makes $700,000 next year. He's got all of this talent. They've stuck by him through all of this. I don't think they want to get rid of him. I think they want to figure out a way for him to be on the same page so that Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, Martavis Bryant could be the most powerful wide receiver trio in the league. That's my thoughts on it. I don't think he's going anywhere, and I think he's been unprofessional about this. I'm very easy on players generally that struggle with substance abuse issues. I know Martavis Bryant has struggled with depression. I'm not going to criticize him for any of that. He's served his punishment. He's trying to move forward. I just think when it came to this point, he was unprofessional about it, criticizing teammates, doing it through social media, demanding trades. He doesn't have that kind of clout to just get up and demand a trade. It's a tactic, probably discussed with his agent, but here we sit. I think Martavis Bryant will be a Steeler come Wednesday, and they'll try to move on from there and get him back in the games. So next thing to talk about, Marcell Dareus trade. Former first-round pick, signed a massive extension. Marcell Dareus is obviously had off the field issues. And I think the Bills, with the new head coach and the new regime and the Bills playing well, honestly, I think they just kind of wanted to separate. And they did that with a few other players that didn't fit scheme, like Reggie Ragland, or they traded to the Chiefs, and Ronald Darby that they traded to the Eagles. They now move Marcell Dareus to the Jaguars. Now, we have seen instances where guys go to new teams and it lights a spark for them. Maybe they're more comfortable in the new environment. I mean, for the Jaguars to add a guy with this kind of talent is pretty crazy, because that defense has been playing well. You saw what they did to the Steelers. You saw what they've done to some other teams. They've taken teams apart, the Colts. And now you add Marcell Dareus, who nobody would argue with his talent. It's just, can he keep his head? Can he keep his head on straight? Can he keep focused and earn all that money that the Bills have laid out for him? So the Jaguars add a tremendous talent to their defensive line. And we'll see exactly how many plays he can get in and how much they rotate him in. But something to consider. And for those of you in IDP fantasy leagues, you know, maybe this means a little bit more for Marcell Dareus. Maybe he can get into a point where he's starting with the Jaguars and making plays along that offensive line. I mean, they have excellent defenders at all three levels on this team. You got a good mix of younger players and a couple of vets in there like Calais Campbell. So Dareus is a veteran, and we'll see if he can provide some additional veteran leadership in a team that's arrow is pointing up. I mean, they're 4-3, and they've got a quarterback issue, but the quarterback has been taken out of the level of impact that he has had in years past, because now they can run the ball. So I think the Jaguars are going to be sniffing for a playoff spot when it comes down to it. So that's it for all the off the field stuff. How does this last trade affect the Jaguars? I think maybe it just solidifies the D even a little bit more. I think we knew what this team, and most analysts knew what this team was going to be. They were going to try to take the ball out of Bortles' hand. They were going to put it in Leonard Fournette's hand. And as long as he can continue to stay relatively healthy, I know he had the ankle issue, but as if he can stay relatively healthy, I think they're going to be in the mix to win a few more ball games with the defense playing as well as it's played. So I'm not going to bore you with baseball talk. I can say I watched the game last night, a pretty amazing performance by Peacock on the mound, and the Dodgers find themselves in a 2-1 hole, and they need to get one back. They got nothing out of Yu Darvish last night, but this game, the series is far from over. The numbers really shade towards Houston taking this series now with an ever-important Game 3, but I think the Dodgers still have a shot. Many consider them to be the best team in baseball. So we'll come back. We'll continue to talk football. I'll go over injuries next before we take a look at the games for Week 8. It's Mike Blue and the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Roto Experts. As we go through Week 8, we're going to do some the ever popular injury segment, as we need to go over the injuries of the day. I'm going to welcome in George now. George, I know you're having a little bit of a technical issue, but happy to have you here on Saturday morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I've never been so happy to get on a show in my life.
So I talked about a bunch of different issues before you came on, but I'll let you comment on it really quick. Kiko Alonso hit on Joe Flacco. Does he get suspended for that?
Probably. In this day and age, you can't hit the quarterback in the head. I don't think it was a nasty one where he was deliberately trying to hurt him. I think it's one of those split-second things. but there's no denying. You hit a quarterback in the head, the onus is on you. You know, you're the one who was wrong. You know, Flacco was sliding. I understand he probably slipped late when I first thought. I'm like, all right, it looked terrible. And you really see, like, oh, he really put his shoulder into his head. So I think he's probably going to have to deal with the one-game suspension, yeah.
I could go either way on it. I shaded towards no, but because I didn't think it was as egregious. But, yeah, the more you watch it, you realize he did lay a bit of a shoulder into it. It's just like when you look at like that all 22 angle and you see that Flacco has, I know he's not fast by any means, but he has really an open lane there towards the end zone at one point. It closes very quickly because he's not fleet of foot. But I think the onus is going to be on Alonso. Conceivably, I could see him getting a fine and just eating that penalty. Obviously, the game was chippy in general. I don't know if that's going to contribute to it and them trying to shut things like that down. But, I can understand you feeling that way. Now, I'll let you comment on the other thing I talked about. The Texans obviously had the walkout of practice on Friday. They had a whole bunch of players walk out. Only DeAndre Hopkins didn't return. Do you think it has any impact on the way that they're going to perform, or can they galvanize as a team, forgetting about the owner's comments?
Well, stupid comment to say the least. I mean, you have to watch what you say. Are they going to galvanize over it? Is it going to be a distraction? Certainly a distraction. What would all football teams hate? We say it over and over again. They hate distractions. Mm-hmm. Right? This is why, you know, some players don't have a job. Colin Kaepernick, because distractions. You know, the questions are going to get asked. And now you put one on yourself with a dumb comment here. You don't know how the player is going to react. It was late in the week, so it wasn't like they missed they missed a Tuesday practice or a Wednesday practice. You know, it was Friday, so it's concerning to say the least. Hopkins walked out. I was really surprised more players didn't walk out. So I'm curious to see what happens here, but in the end, I don't think it will. Not unless, I mean, will all players now, you know, sit for the kneel for the national anthem or whatever they're going to do on Sunday? That would bring more focus to what he said. So it could be a problem. You're playing Seattle anyway. And that's not going to make things any easier either. In Seattle at that. So certainly not what Bob McNair wants to see happen.
The interesting thing in it being Seattle is that of all the NFL franchises, it's the city combined with the owner, combined with the personalities on the team that has been most receptive to a form of protest, most open about their protest, and frankly, most open with the community at large. A lot of players in Seattle working with local law enforcement in order to try to gain a better understanding of some of the issues that occur in the community. So I don't know if that helps or hurts what the Texans may or may not do. It's certainly if the players engage in any form of protest, it's going to put McNair in an even worse spot, because if he comes out harsh against it, he's going to be seen as even doubly insensitive to what his comment was.
Yeah, and Seattle has their own issues, right? That Doug Baldwin, the offensive coordinator, got at it last week, and there was some pushing and shoving there. You know, Seattle seems to be where they were last year. I mean, listen, I like Pete Carroll as a coach, but he doesn't have much control of that team either.
He does not. Yeah, he lets the players kind of run the show. I think that's always been his motto. He's pretty loose as far as structure is concerned. Now, Baldwin has a reputation of being highly competitive, of being his nickname by some reports is Angry Doug, or it was his nickname in the past. He heard that when all the Percy Harvin stuff came out. Now, I'll say this. He did profusely apologize. He said he lost his cool. It's my fault. Heat of the moment. I can't do stuff like that. I have to be better about it. So it doesn't mean that you can keep doing it, but he did apologize for it. So, but an interesting point to bring up nonetheless. So enough of that stuff for now. The Marcell Dareus trade I talked about a little bit. I mean, how ineffective you have to be earning all that money and be that kind of talent, and they still ship you out for a sixth round pick, George. It's perplexing, but the Jaguars pick up another talented defender.
They do, and if he plays up the capabilities, good luck stopping that pass rush. That's going to be a nightmare. Jacksonville already had a great defense, and now this has got even better. Buffalo gets some salary cap flexibility more than anything else. Sixth-round pick's not going to do them a whole lot unless they use the trade-ups at someplace else. But I think it was a decent deal for both teams. Darius wasn't doing anything for Buffalo. Now Buffalo gets the cap room. You know, they get a six-round pick at that. Jacksonville gets a player who, let's face it, If it can be 80% of what he's capable of doing, that defensive line's a nightmare.
I totally agree. So I'll get through the injuries right now. Washington, who will be playing the Cowboys on Sunday. They get Josh Norman back, so that's helpful. Des Bryant owners, keep that in mind. The matchup that you thought might be a little bit easier gets a little bit tougher with Josh Norman back. They also, Washington also plays the linebacker Mason Foster on IR with a torn labrum. He's out for the year with a shoulder injury. Washington's at a point now where they're one of the teams that's really banged up. They're in need of, you know, some healing pretty quickly. Rashad Breeland banged up. Most of the offensive line is banged up, including Brandon Scherff and Trent Williams. So you're going to have to keep in mind there's probably some guys that'll miss the game on Sunday, and it could impact them in a way. And it's a really big game for them, obviously, going up against the Cowboys. I'll continue down through Minnesota Vikings receivers, Stephon Diggs, Michael Floyd, tackle Riley Reiff, center Nick Easton, and cornerback Mackenzie Alexander are all questionable for Sunday's game against the Cleveland Browns in London. So one thing I didn't mention yet this show, we do have a London game tomorrow on Sunday, and it is early. It's 9:30 a.m. Eastern. So those of you that have Browns, God bless you. I hope you don't have many of them. And the Vikings players are obviously going to have to be in there very early. George, have you heard anything about Diggs? Because he's the guy that most people are going to be concerned with.
It looks like Diggs is going to play. You know, maybe a little bit surprised. See, I don't think Minnesota would need Diggs to win this game. So I think if he had any kind of, you know, injury, oh, maybe we should play him, maybe we shouldn't. You probably shouldn't here. Give him that extra, you know, week to rest here. But it looks like, as of right now, he's going to play. That's certainly good news for Diggs owners. But it's the problem with Diggs, right? He's very good when he's on the field. Problem is he does get banged up a lot. He's not someone who's always available there. But to answer your question, Mike, he is listed as questionable. You know, so it is a game-time decision, but it's the other game. So, you know, it's the first game of the day. He doesn't play. You move on there. You make your moves there. Or you start if somebody else is on your roster there. So we'll know, Sunday morning about 8 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, Stephon Diggs not a big receiver, so I think I don't want to paint him with the brush that he's going to be the chronically injured guy, but we see this with some of the smaller receivers. You know, they get banged up over time. It's tough to get through 16 games. He's listed at 6 feet, 195 pounds, all kinds of ability and speed, but doesn't mean that he can take the pounding that a larger receiver can take, which makes it all the more impressive that Antonio Brown is not all that big. He's out on the field all the time, knock on wood. Moving on, Buffalo Bills, Charles Clay continues to be out. Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver John Ross is off the injury report, so he could play or should play against the Colts this Sunday, be his first start since week two. Now, I don't think he has much in the way of fantasy value, but for those of you in keeper leagues, or you may have stashed him in deeper leagues, he'll be back. So we continue down through. Luke Kuechly for the Panthers looks like he's going to be back. Even though he's questionable, he was cleared from the concussion protocol, so the Panthers get their best defender back, George.
Yeah, and they'll need that. Listen, Kuechly is another one. I don't know if he's ever going to be able to play concussion-free for the rest of his career. I think this will rear its ugly head again. I'm not saying it'll be this week. Maybe it's later this year, next season. But these head injuries generally don't go away. And once again, you're a linebacker, which means you're making those tackles on running backs a lot. And what are you leading with? Your head a lot, a big portion of the time. So as much as we all love Luke Kuechly, great player, maybe the best linebacker in football, I don't see this going away.
He's my favorite player in football, George. I think I've said on this show many times, Boston College connection, and I was a season ticket holder when he was a player. Love watching him play. I root for him, rooted for him at BC and certainly in the NFL, and I really hope he can stay healthy, but I'd be bummed, but I would in some ways almost hope that he just calls it a day. I wouldn't want him to have any long-term ramifications by continuing to play. I understand that's an impossible thing for him to give up considering how good he is at it and how hard he's worked at it, but I just don't want to see anything bad happen to him. So I'll continue down through Kenny Britt off the injury report. Hopefully you're not dealing with him. As we get down through Melvin Gordon from the Chargers, he's questionable to play against the Patriots, but it looks like, again, he'll continue to just gut it out, George, and he'll be back out on the field. He's been questionable just about every week.
Yeah, he has, and it's been a little frustrating there. Like, didn't have the big game last week. You get New England. I mean, New England really can't stop anybody. Down to Hightower right now. He's gone probably for the rest of the season, so that weakens an already questionable defense here. I think there's going to be a lot of points scored in this game, Mike, and I still want a healthy Melvin Gordon playing in it.
It's a good point about Hightower. Now, the Pats have obviously not allowed that many points in the last 3 weeks. I wouldn't say that they've made a complete sea change in their defense, but they've done better. But the Hightower thing is a big blow for them. He's lost for at least the rest of the fantasy season, probably the rest of the season. And that helps Gordon. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the injuries. We'll wrap up the hour on the Roto Experts. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
The award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network is your free fantasy source 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You can catch this show and many others live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio. Want to listen on your computer at work? Go to fntsy.com/radio or check us out on YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page, where you can ask questions, discuss topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your questions on the air. The number is 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 days a year fantasy sports network of its kind without a subscription. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your fantasy source.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike and George. You can hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. George is at George Kurtz. I'm at Mike Blewett. And George, I got to give a shout out because we were talking about Luke Kuechly in the last segment and Boston College and all that. I got to give a shout out to my alma mater. They beat Florida State 35-3 last night. Now, clearly, something is amiss for Florida State as they dropped to 2-5, their first five loss season, I believe. Under Jimbo Fisher, and they're at risk of missing a bowl game for the first time since 1982, I believe it is. But Boston College, 35-3, they lost to FSU like seven times in a row. So I got to give props to my alma mater.
Okay, congrats.
Yes, that's what I want. I just wanted congratulations out of you. That's all I needed. We're not going to talk BC football for the next hour. I just had to be, I mean, that's a big win, even though FSU stinks. But in any event, we're going to move back through the injuries.
I guess you'll take any win you can get.
Absolutely. They're 5-4 now, which I didn't think they'd be. I thought it was going to go south and there'd be a coaching change, but that doesn't appear to be happening. So we'll talk BC football in the third hour of the show, in the third hour of the two-hour show that we do. So, moving on to other injury issues, Detroit Lions wide receiver Kenny Golladay and starting left tackle Greg Robinson are both out against the Steelers. Golden Tate, Ziggy Ansah, Paul Warlow listed as questionable. The Tate thing has me wringing my hands, George, because it's the Sunday night game. They said it was a multiple-week injury. He's only been out a week, and now here we are, and we got to stare down an 8:30 start on Sunday night where you will bypass other options to hope that Tate can go. It seems to be trending in the right direction, but I'm not convinced.
No, neither am I, and this is a problem. Because even if he does play, two problems. Is he going to finish the game? You don't know that. Steelers have a pretty good defense. We're not talking they're playing San Francisco 49ers here, where he's going to light them up. Can he finish the game? You don't know that either. That first time he lands on the shoulder, how's that going to feel? No, I'm not all that thrilled about this here. This is going to come down to me, Mike, with what else do you have? If you're not going to start Tate, who are you starting? If it's somebody who's decent, I'm probably going to go in that other direction. If it's somebody who's terrible, then I'll probably roll the dice on Tate.
I'll do mine in the next segment. I'll go through my lineups with Tate, and we can kind of take a look at what options are that certain people may have. I've Tate on a couple of teams where it's not an easy decision, but That is what it is. Seahawks guard Luke Joku won't play against the Texans, and CJ Procise is doubtful. I mean, good luck if you've had any of these Seattle running backs. This is brutal. Patriots wide receiver Danny Amendola says he's good to go, even though he's listed as questionable. So good news if you have an Amendola, if you're an Amendola owner. And George, I'll finish with the last one. Reuben Foster listed as questionable. The rookie linebacker who should be crushing it in IDP leagues just continues to get dinged up. And I watched a play where he got hurt the other day. It was, you know, he tweaked his ankle. But I think he's going to try and gut it out. But, man, this guy's been hurt all season.
Yeah, it's been disappointing. I own him in an IDP league, so I certainly want him on the field. But imagine he's been dinged up. I mean, it happens. You know, guys do get dinged up. He had the high ankle sprain. Now he's got, you know, hopefully stays on the field here. It's a game where, listen, Sunday, Philadelphia's going to wreck him. Let's face it. It's going to be a blowout game here. But, yeah. You know, you're going to get some tackles there from Forster on Smallwood, on someone like LeGarrette Blount. So you certainly want him in your lineup. But, yes, it's been a trying season for the top rookie.
Last two, Jameis Winston expected to play with that shoulder injury, and Dan Bailey, the Cowboys kicker, could be out 4 more weeks. You got to cut Bailey and pick up another kicker. Mike and George coming back for hour number 2 after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.